This is a Triple J podcast.
Can you imagine what it would be like meeting your family for the first time as an adult? Trying to form bonds with people you've never met and connect to culture you've never known. Figuring out who you are as a person and where you came from. Look, for so many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, this has been their journey as part of the Stolen Generations. And this stuff isn't just history. The experiences live on today. I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Long Listen of the Week, a chat with Warramai woman Ellen Karamanovic. When you hear about the Stolen Generations, it's easy to think it's something from the distant past, a piece of Australian history from 100 years ago. But the reality is, the Stolen Generations, the forced removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children from their families and communities, was in place until the 1970s. And that means there are young Australians today whose parents and grandparents were subjected to this, including Ellen.
Can be a very tricky kind of area for some people to sort of feel like you're completely accepted or included into that space.
In this chat with Ellen, we talk about why this is an important time to reflect on that history. National Sorry Day a few days ago, leading into Reconciliation Week. Ellen says we need to be thinking about it now more than ever.
There's, I feel like, an uplift in racism and denial of what our communities have gone through.
In this chat, Ellen talks about her personal experiences and why she thinks everyone needs to get on board with fixing things for the future.
You know, it's a beautiful thing, culture, and can really benefit so many people.
So here it is, my chat with Ellen Karamanovic from the Healing Foundation. Ellen Karamanovic, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today.
How does this week sit with you, Ellen? Like, first Sorry Day leading into Reconciliation Week, is it a hard time?
It is. I mean, it's a heavy moment when you think of the real history that has happened in this country, that continued impact that's going on in our communities, and just that real lived reality of those ongoing impacts for survivors themselves and the descendants, the families around them.
Ellen, can you tell us a bit about your family history? So your mum was part of the Stolen Generations.
Yeah. And a couple of connections with Stolen Generations, but my mum was removed at birth, so up on the coast of New South Wales, taken straight to the train station, brought into Central here in Sydney and put into a group home. And then from there, you know, was eventually fostered and then adopted into a family.
When was your mum reconnected with her family?
She would have been in her 30s. It was in the year 2000 that my mum was fortunate enough to reconnect with our family. It was quite a lengthy process to be able to get access to records and I guess to really sort of piece together how to track back that connection to the family and community. It's a massive step for someone to try to go through that process, you know, whether or not you know what you're going to be confronted with when you're coming back into that situation of re-meeting family and that reunification process.
And you were a kid.
Like, yeah.
So what do you remember that process happening and what it was like?
I remember like being quite emotional. when I think back to it, like, I was at school that day, like mum just went by herself to meet her mum. So I think probably just to take that bit of pressure off. So it's like just them two could reconnect and meet before like we got to meet the family and everything as well. But yeah, definitely like super, super emotional because it's like, I don't know, there's just like an instant sort of connection there. Because it's family, it's blood, it's, you know, it's a part of who we were. But I guess it's also, there's like those elements of sort of that unknown and not knowing what that process was going to bring for us. And I guess as a kid, I think I was about 7 years old when that all happened. But I think, yeah, just sort of knowing the impact that had on my mum, like obviously that's sort of like the closest person in your life at that point in time as a young kid. So just knowing how heavy that was for her to kind of go through that process. And she ended up to be in a very, you know, fortunate situation with it of reconnecting with a family that wanted to reconnect with her. I guess that we knew who we were, that we were strong in our cultural identity and our family all together. So I think, yeah, definitely grateful that it turned into a positive experience for us, because I know it's not always, doesn't always work out like that for families reuniting.
I can imagine that there are some stories of people just not connecting as well as they would have hoped, or just facing a lot of difficulties. Yeah. And it feels like it would be an ongoing process.
Yeah, definitely. And even I guess still now, like, I'm very mindful for, like, my brothers have kids, and like for my nieces and nephews, of knowing who we are, and still having that connection to community, and making sure, like, for me, I'm just trying to be as connected and a part of our community as possible. And, you know, that's where I want to, like, keep passing that down to my nieces and nephews, and continue that connection and, you know, that strength in what comes from culture for us as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Can you tell us a bit about what you found out about your family, where your family's from, and, you know, how you're reconnecting?
Yeah. So, I mean, like you said, so I'm a Worimi woman. So my family are from Port Stephens area of New South Wales. My grandmother was a nurse, so had gone through university and done amazing things in that space. So my mum's siblings, they're all doctors. So seeing, you know, some of the great strengths that have come from our family being able to go into these education settings that a lot of the time, you know, were excluding people and weren't always put as pathways that, you know, little black kids could kind of, you know, go down and get those educations to be who they wanted to be. So seeing, yeah, so much strength in my immediate sort of family setting there, yeah, it was amazing to to sort of come into as a little kid and seeing, like, the great things that they were all aspiring to do and, you know, continue to do for our community and the broader community as well. Yeah, I think it's just, it's been amazing in that reconnection process, but also the parts of connecting to culture and really strengthening identity. I think that's a massive piece, particularly for Stolen Generation members. If you're reuniting and descendants coming back to family, it can be a very tricky kind of area for some people to sort of feel like you're completely accepted or included into that space. And I think for, like, for my mum and for us, we were very, very much just kind of brought into the family and completely accepted with that. And now, you know, like, getting to be involved in community events and, like, ceremony and things that are happening in our community and prioritising that, because I know how important that is to continue culture and pass that on to our next generations.
I'm imagining, I don't know, but I'm imagining that it's a beautiful thing to reconnect, but also there would be a lot of pressure there to feel like you have to try and repair things that have been destroyed in the last few generations.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of things that I guess are broken down in that process of, I guess, of that, particularly for my mum, it would have been, I guess, a hard space to navigate. She would have been in her 30s, like I said, when she reunited. And I think, like, at that point in time, you know, you would feel quite lost of who you actually are. For her, she kind of found herself in situations where she was labelled as a black fella, late teens into her 20s, wanting to go out clubbing or whatever. She'd find herself not being allowed entry into different places because of the racism that was happening then. And being identified as an Aboriginal person, but not knowing who she actually was. I think, like, that would have been a super tricky thing to navigate.
I'm interested to know what your feelings are when you think about the stuff that your mum and your grandmother, other generations have endured. When you think about the Stolen Generations,
yeah,
are you upset? Are you sad? Are you angry? Like, what is the overriding emotion that you tend to feel?
I mean, yeah, that's a massive question. I think it is a huge kind of whirlwind of emotions. Like, you can probably feel all of those things at the same time. But I think there is that big sense of, I guess, that hurt and sadness that sort of is probably, like, profound in all of that. Or I think the denial as well that kind of is very much still happening in this country. I think, yeah, that sort of hurt and sadness are probably the most telling kind of emotions that come out.
Is it something you're still coming to terms with, you think?
Yeah, something that you probably, like, for me, I feel like it'll just be a part of, like, my whole life. I guess it's not something that you sort of can completely work through. And I know for myself, and I guess not wanting to speak, like, too much on my mum, like, she's passed away now, but knowing, like, she had gone through her own mental health issues with this whole process of being removed and denied her culture and the upbringing that she then had, which was, you know, another layer of trauma that happened on top of that. But yeah, I think for myself, I know that there is a lot that still goes on that weighs you down. I've been working through that for quite a long time, like trying to, I guess, work on my mental health and well-being, seeing a psychologist and, you know, like just staying connected with community, with my culture and everything to strengthen my spirit. There's a lot that goes into it all.
Yeah. And part of that is being a part of the Healing Foundation, yeah. I would think. Can you tell us what that is about? Like, what is the Healing Foundation?
Yeah. So the Healing Foundation, it came about after the apology to the Stolen Generations. It was one of the outcomes that they wanted from going through that process, that there was a national body to, I guess, in a sense, be like an advocate for all of the Stolen Generation organizations across the country. And there's a lot of work that goes on from the organization, but the part that I get to be involved with is with the youth reference group, that there's young voices that are also being involved in the conversations when we're talking about the Stolen Generations, that is to be able to, you know, sit side by side with the Stolen Generation members that are involved with the organization as well, the services that are around that input into, you know, I guess, giving that direction of what work the Healing Foundation need to be doing. I think a massive part of what the Healing Foundation are doing at the moment is around that, trying to really push for, we need action. We need to move from that sorry statement that happened in 2008, but we're still seeing that there's so much that hasn't been done.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think things are getting better for survivors and their descendants, or does it feel like there's not much focus on this situation nationally?
Great question. I think that there is a huge missing piece to the action needing to be done. Like, I think it's a lot of the time sort of, it's like that push to the side, it's impacting a smaller group of people. It's not really been a priority area for government systems. And I guess everyone that sort of has that input to be able to create that change at the system level.
To be clear, what kind of action do you think is needed? Like, you talk about services and resources. Yeah. Is there anything else that you think needs to be an urgent priority?
I mean, there's definitely an urgency around the Stolen Generations aging, and very quickly. We know that we're losing community so fast that we need, particularly when we're looking at, say, like the health and aged care sector, to be able to respond to situations in culturally safe ways, to be really informed of what the Stolen Generation members have gone through. Like, a lot of these people have gone into different systemic institutions that have left a lifetime impact on them. And if people are going into, say, like aged care services and things, there's a lot of re-traumatization. People aren't being treated in ways where there's an understanding of knowing where people are coming from.
Ellen, as an Aboriginal woman, how do you feel about the state of things in Australia right now in terms of when it comes to First Nations people and their position within this country?
At this point in time, there's, I feel like, an uplift in racism and denial of what our communities have gone through for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. It's quite confronting. I think there's, I guess, different elements that sort of all play into that, whether that's our national political sort of atmosphere. I feel like it's also contributing from like international sort of politics and things that are happening across the world. There just seems to be a lot of deep-seated sort of hatred towards our communities, which I think it gets so much of a voice, and it's hard to overcome some of those things. And particularly when you're seeing sort of systems failing communities in certain areas, there's a definite power imbalance that's going on in this country.
When it comes to reconciliation, respect, recognition, do you think we're moving forward?
I don't want to sound too negative in that, but I don't think so. I don't think there's a lot of momentum in moving forward. There's obviously elements that, you know, we do see some good things come out, But I think we're not seeing enough action or progress in these areas. And the same with, you know, I guess Reconciliation Week and the actions that should be coming with that. It closely relates to Sorry Day, that there is so much that could be happening within the community, or like to be supporting our communities, isn't happening at the moment.
Are you hopeful for the future?
I think there's, I guess when you're looking at particularly a lot of our younger people within our communities, there's still so much passion and that fire in the belly of wanting to really create change. And we're seeing that from a lot of diverse communities as well, which I think is a very special kind of moment. So I think, yeah, definitely hopeful that there's a shift in some of those things coming through for our community.
What would you say to non-Indigenous people about their role in things like reconciliation and moving forward? Is there any message you have for people about what they should be thinking about, or advice on how they should approach these things?
I think we need to all be able to, I guess, recognise where we need to educate ourselves and be open to honest conversations that are going on around us. You know, we live in a world where technology and everything's like right at the tip of our fingers. We need people to just really, I guess, step up, not take that sort of ignorance piece, really take accountability for being able to understand what has happened, that history needs to be listened to, and I guess just being open to having those conversations. So whether you're doing some of that research on your own, which I think everyone should be sort of encouraged to be able to do that piece, but also open to getting out into community and seeing what it's all about. And I guess just having that real sort of, you know, sense of why we need our culture to be understood and really uplifted in this country, because, you know, it's a beautiful thing, culture, and can really benefit so many people if you're, you know, taking pride in, you know, ways of knowing, being and doing. I think it's, if everyone can kind of get behind that, we can really create a much more positive sort of space for everyone to be involved in.
Really lovely message, and I appreciate your honesty and for speaking with us during what is a big week. Ellen Karamanovic, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And that is all we've got time for on Hack's Long Listen. Remember, subscribe to this podcast if you did like that chat, because we've got long listens dropping every single week. Our deep dives. Also, go follow us on socials as well. We're always updating there at Triple J Hack on Instagram and TikTok. I'll catch you next time.